Dalai Lama said once that the only text you really need to read in Buddhism is one by Shantideva called The Way of the Bodhisattva. There's a great quote in that particular bit of text that says, when crows find a dying snake, they behave like eagles. When I see myself as a victim, I am hurt by trifling failures. When crows find a dying snake, they behave like eagles. When I see myself as a victim, I am hurt by trifling failures. This is what gets in the way of awakening. Last week we spoke of attaching to doubt. When we doubt and we attach to it, boom, there goes the wall. We see ourselves as separate from other, and in that separation there's always a kernel of victimization. And in that victimhood, in the birth of that victimhood, everything becomes some form of an assault. We become hurt by these trifling failures that occupy our world. This work then is to get beyond that. Get beyond our identification with separation. Once we do that, we get beyond our identification with any type of victimhood. This takes commitment. So tonight, I kind of wanted to address that issue. Commitment. What does it mean to be committed on this path? And I'm not sure I really know. But I do know that usually we fall into this practice. Usually we are curious about this practice. Once we begin to feel others' pain, when we can see other people hurting and we can feel it, that empathy that oftentimes is masked as sympathy begins to inform a deepening of our consciousness. We begin to become more aware of our world as we see others hurt. It's very easy to internalize another's pain and go after the perpetrators or the people or the situations that we view as perpetrating this crime. But oftentimes that can be just another form of hiding, of flinching from what's being presented. The deeper we go into ours and others' pain, the more deeply that we explore it, the more often we recognize that the only true reality, the fundamental truth of all things, is uncertainty. That nothing but nothing is certain. So our tendency is to be certain. Our tendency is to know. Our tendency is to compartmentalize. Our tendency is to take all things that show up and surprise us, that show up and scare us, that show up and please us, that show up, whatever shows up, whatever arises, we tend to categorize, compartmentalize. We put it here, we put it there, we file it away. And in so doing, we squish the flower. We crush the blessing. With our own sense of truth, we become agents of a personalization of truth, as opposed to agents opening to the deep impersonalization of uncertainty. Uncertainty is totally impersonal. Can we be committed to that? Can we be committed to wonder, to curiosity, to not knowing? If we can be committed to that, then suddenly our intelligence is used to let go of itself, and wisdom is born. If we can let go of our intellectual acumen, wisdom is born. Not until then. When this wisdom is born, there's an automatic longing for the deep singularity. There's an automatic longing for spirit. There's an automatic longing for connectivity. There's an automatic longing for blessedness, for grace. And miraculously, it happens. But we can get in our way with our own sense of certainty. Not knowing is closest. That said, the way we do this is by recognizing that the body and the mind are the vehicle for this very awakening. You have to want this. Kinda. There has to be aspiration, in other words. You have to value it. You have to value this process. You have to value this commitment. Kinda. There has to be an appreciation. You also have to know, and this may be the most important, that it is possible. It is possible. So there needs to be resolve. Kinda. And the reason why I say kinda is because the minute we become all about resolve, we contract. The minute we become all about appreciation, that's a contraction. The minute we become all about aspiration, becomes a contraction. When we become certain of our aspiration, we become certain of our appreciation, we become certain of our resolve, we get in the way of what each of these gifts can help us meet. So what do? We meet. We meet everything that arises. And we commit to that meeting, whatever it is. We may not know what's around the corner, ever. We may never know what's there, but can we commit to meeting what arises? We know for sure that uncertainty is all there is. So we can relax in that if we continually approach uncertainty with loving kindness. If we continually approach uncertainty as a teacher, if we commit to allowing uncertainty inform everything about our work as human beings, this leads us on an ever deepening plummet down the rabbit hole. And we realize that we actually don't ever hit anything. I love that line from the film, What the Bleep Do We Know? How deep down the rabbit hole do you want to go? What's your commitment? Do you have the courage to walk into the white hot fire of truth, of uncertainty, and meet everyone there? Maybe not. Maybe. That is the work. And every single Buddha did it that way. Every single enlightened sage has done it that way. All the great men and women who have walked this path before us are all pointing in the same exact direction, straight towards truth, straight towards uncertainty, straight towards not knowing, straight towards opening. So, we commit to not flinching in the face of what scares us. If something scares you, do not run away, whatever it is. If it's a thought, do not run away from the thought. Do not suppress it. If something bothers you, meet it. Let it be. Let it be. Don't try to change it. Just let it be. And watch what happens. Like all things, you will see that it is temporary. You will see that it is dependent on all sorts of other things. You will see that at its essence is nothing, is emptiness. Just like a flame. If you look at a flame, you can identify a flame, right? Is the flame ever certain? Never. It's never certain. Its life is predicated on an interdependence with wick, candle, wind, everything. All right? Can you identify it? Yes. Just like the self, you can identify the self. Some selves burn brightly. Some burn with a greater force than others. Are they temporary? Always. Are they interdependent? Of course. At their essence, what is there? Space. That's it. Can we commit to that? Can we commit to that type of living? Can we resolve, can we commit to reflecting on some purpose, that is supported by a simple ethic, not to harm? Can we live from that place with that type of intention? Can we forever commit to meeting what is real? To not fighting uncertainty? Can we embrace it? Can we look at uncertainty as a gift? Can we recognize the traps? Among the biggest traps, piety. I think, to editorialize for a moment, I think this is where wisdom traditions are facing incredible difficulty in this century. And it will only get worse. As the piety increases, so does the gripping. As the gripping increases, so does the fundamentalist approach towards spirit. Fundamentalism is certain. It blocks awakening for each of us. Another thing we should be careful of, fantasy. Whatever you think spiritual enlightenment, awakening, Buddhahood is, whatever you think it is not that. It is more. Watch the fantasy. Watch your fantasy. Be very clear about what arises. Watch your attachment to fixed ideas. Watch my attachment to fixed ideas. Watch, watch, watch. And watch for feelings of smugness or superiority. Each one of those is a form of certainty. Can we commit to looking at that, recognizing that the only reality is the opposite of that? The only true reality is the opposite of certainty. And if we can also always remember to recognize an orientation of our life, not around what's right, which is always mind-created, but around what's generous. Can we orient our life around that generosity? What is right is closed. What is generous is open. What is generous is a conscious apprehension of uncertainty. It is giving. I'm going to try not to attach to it, but I love that. I think when we know that ultimately it's never about right or wrong. Ultimately, it is never about right or wrong if everything is unreliable. If everything is uncertain, it can't be about certainty. Okay? It's about an openness to an openness to the results of ours and others' activities and choices. It's about an openness to an openness of the results of ours and others' choices and activity. If we can be in that place and rest there and relax there, we embody awakening. And in those conversations, when it's not about I, me, mine, you, yours, ours, theirs, us, them. Us becomes them. I become you. I bow and connect with the blackness of your pupils. They are the same color as mine. It's the same awareness. It arises within my awareness. All things arise within my awareness. If they arise within our awareness, they arise within us. All things arise within us. We are manifestations, therefore, of this uncertainty. We are uncertain. We are the great, ultimate uncertainty.
I used to frequently end the Dharma talk, okay, now forget everything I said.
Right.
And I didn't really understand what that meant for the longest time. And I can remember driving home with David and I'd ask him questions about what we were listening to, and he told me he didn't remember. And I thought that was even more odd.
Yeah.
Because I was really trying to work on it. And then I finally figured it out. You're letting it in for the bigger I inside who can understand it, or excuse me, who can make use of it without even understanding it. You just let it in.
Yeah.
Is that it?
If I say anything here, I'm screwed, right? Because if I say yeah, then you might cling to that, right? And if I say no, then you're going to work at it harder, right?
Right.
Next question.
Okay.
No. Mark, spot on.
Yeah. It's almost like the harder you try to work at this, the harder you make it.
Always. Always. But sometimes that can be really helpful because it can bring about all sorts of excruciating pain. And excruciating pain typically is what brings us here in the first place, because we recognize something's not working. I have everything I could possibly want or need, but there's something missing, or there's something that's just torturing me.
Mm-hmm.
And in that torture, we carry that cross, but that cross still gets us right into it allows us to touch the face of God. It allows us to recognize the Buddha's teachings. You know, life is suffering. Yeah, the more you start mastering suffering, the more you start mastering an extension of yourself that goes way beyond suffering. you start recognizing that there's so much more than just circumstantial me. There is ultimate we. So instead of personal, we start recognizing the totally uncertain impersonal, and that's what's always real.
Mm-hmm.
The other stuff is always, I mean, we call it delusion.
Yeah, and part of the whole thing about wondering is, I think, you don't have to know. And the wondering makes it so it doesn't matter whether you know or not.
You're right.
And almost like not knowing almost makes it better. That
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no. Forget everything you and I just talked about, okay? Right.
I have a simple question. Is there an upside to ego?
Sure.
There is.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because I've been thinking there are some positive things that go along with ego, but so far I've just heard that it causes pain.
It does
doubt.
That too.
Okay.
Yeah, it does that too. Yeah, it's got two faces to it.
Mother Teresa probably had a great ego, right?
I would say Mother Teresa. I would actually, you know, I've written about this before, and spoken about it in Sangha. Every one of the spiritual greats had a massive ego. Infinitely large. They didn't have an ego that was contracted. They had an ego that was big enough to hold the entire universe. Okay? And that means that their ego was one that had gone through itself. It had folded, imploded in on itself and gone out, which is our work. Enlightenment is to literally allow the small to be small and rest in what is infinitely and continually expansive. And once we rest in that infinite expanse, we start recognizing the true unity is totally still. True unity does not move one bit, never has, never will. The awareness that we have in every single moment, as you hold that microphone in your hand right now, the awareness you have of its temperature, the awareness you have right now of the sole of your left foot, the awareness you have right now of the sound of my voice, that awareness has never changed since you were born. The awareness has always been there. It's always been constant. Sometimes you become aware of that awareness more intensely than others, right? And that is consciousness. The awareness of that awareness is consciousness. You can have a personal consciousness, but awareness itself is totally impersonal, because your fundamental awareness, your primordial awareness, is not separate or different from mine or anybody else's. And so when we kind of relax into that, where's ego now? It's not that it doesn't exist. It's that the self has gone from being this small to being infinitely huge. Big enough to hold the whole world, with enough love to radiate freely on all beings forever. But ego gets us there. We can't get there without ego.
We all need bigger egos.
We yeah. I've always thought that you know, when we refer to like somebody who has an ego problem, or you know, in the Freudian sense at least, it's somebody who has a deeply contracted ego, who is really, really certain.
Can't get outside themselves.
Exactly. Mm. They can't witness their experience. They can't watch their experience. They are their experience. Mm. Instead of watching their anger, they are angry, which is positively wrong. You're never angry. You are something much bigger than anger. Mm. Anger is your contraction. And I'd like to say that I'm really certain about that, but I'm not.
And I'll forget it anyway.
Okay, good, good. Yeah, just forget everything I just said. It's a great policy. Whatever McAllister says, just forget it.